Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome to this live stream. You're here with Chris and Evie today, and we missed last week because we were traveling at that point in time. So we really wish we could have been here with you, and certainly missed being here with all of you, but we're here today, and we're really happy to have this live stream. As always, the point of this is to interact with you. So bring your comments up. Can't wait to see you. Hey, oh, just finished reading The Crash Course yesterday. Great book. Thank you, Wayne. Love that. And
all right, let me say hi.
Evie wants to say hi.
Hi. Good to see y'all.
Hello, Evie.
Hi.
So it's spring here at the farm.
It is indeed.
It's
let's fly by the seat of your pants, get everything in the ground real quick. Everything has to happen at once.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. There are also a lot of social things going on this time of year. It's crazy. It's crazy here at the farm.
It is. And Chip C says, happy Killdozer and Tiananmen Square Day.
So, oh.
Remember the Killdozer?
Yes. With the guy that was...
Yeah. You just got totally shafted by the town.
Yeah,
and so he spent months
awesome.
Building this dozer that couldn't be taken apart by means. And then he went on a little rampage.
We should watch that video sometime.
You know, that's a lot of people take that as sort of like the feel-good story because it's... Because something happened there, which was he didn't just go out on a rampage and just destroy the whole town randomly. He went after the specific houses of the people who had inarguably completely wronged him. And so that was kind of a fun thing to watch, you know. Consequences.
Consequences.
Consequences. All right. So today, I think we got to talk about... So we start last couple times, we've been going through a series of things talking about, we're in this period of time called the fourth turning. And this is one of the hallmarks of that is framing as crisis. And the hallmark of that crisis is loss of faith in institutions. And nothing has more profoundly impacted me than watching the absolute demolition of the FBI as a believable, trustworthy institution of any sort whatsoever. You know, the first rule of PR and crisis management is that when you mess up, you admit you messed up, you take ownership for it, you tell people how it's not going to happen again, what steps you took, right? And then you apologize, right? But the FBI has been caught over and over and over again, basically operating in a highly extra legal manner, which is totally inconsistent with any of the values that it ostensibly is organized around. So I want to talk about that a little bit because I think... It's just getting silly at this point, Evie, that the number of, I think I can spot a fake Fed, a fake protester.
You think so?
I think so.
All right.
It's trickier than ever in this day and age of, AI bots and everything online. But in real life, we might be able to actually check this out. So I just want to talk about these, you know, some Feds and some PSYOPs and things like that. So I'm going to have to reach way over here to get this to advance. So this, I don't know if you saw this, Evie, but this just came up on Twitter today.
Nope.
All right.
I have not been on Twitter today.
So this is another something's being protested, and then these guys show up, right? This group of dudes shows up, right? And they always look the same, right? Suspiciously sort of fit. Their faces are always fully covered, right?
Always for the same age, too.
Same age, you know. They kind of have this uniform look. By the way, look at that. Look at that little Lexan, that little shield, the AFN in there right now. I'm going to keep this muted because they're saying something. They're basically saying W power, right? You know, and they're chanting this thing. So this is supposed to convince us that we have a huge issue right now with far right ultra white nationalists, right? And everybody's trying to convince us we have a problem. And I keep looking at these guys going, I'm not buying it. So let's just, let me just play this real quick because this is just, wrong mouse. I got so many things going on over here. So yeah, let's check this out real quick.
White power!
Oh, yeah, let me.
White
let me
power!
I don't want that going.
White power!
Yeah, give me my mute. Nah, it's not going to do it. Anyway, these are the guys. This is what they're doing, right?
White power!
Seek power!
All right, so. You want to know the first thing I'm going to observe about these guys?
What? What's up?
See that flag up there? The black one? Do you see the creases in it?
Looks like they just bought it.
They just bought it.
Amazon.
I think it just
Etsy or something.
If you want to find out who these people are, I think all we have to do is track recent Amazon purchases, because this is like a new decal here. You know,
yeah.
Like, let me get my drawing tool out here. Or the laser pointer. This is like, look at this. There's no scuffs on this Lexan shield, and I don't even know what that would do per se.
It's true. Oh, somebody in the chat said Finn Bear said no tattoos.
Yeah, where are all those tattoos? Shouldn't they have like a lot of like, you know, those tattoos like we see in the Azov battalion out of Ukraine?
Right. And they'd be proud. Identifying marks. Either that or they just cover them for this. I don't know.
Yeah. But I don't think you can easily see then that those flags are brand spanking new. And I think the shirts, everything just looks like it was bought yesterday, doesn't it? Right. All right. Well, we've seen this before, right? These are some gentlemen who showed up at a Patriot rally. It's like, this is like, could these be feds anymore, obviously, right? So this is a meme now, right? This is a meme. People, you know, have memed the death out of this particular one because it's just completely obvious. Look at them all with their similar watches. You know, I'm sure there's like some speaky.
That's true. They all look very similar to each other, like a similar lifestyle. And they shop at the same store and they get their shoes at the same place and their sunglasses.
Yeah.
And they got the memo, whatever it was. But it really isn't an accurate cross-section of people. Like, if you look at demographics in the United States, at least, that would be totally unusual.
Yeah.
Of a smattering of people.
Yep.
At a movement or an event that, yeah. I'm not buying it either, I don't think.
Yeah, that's how I see it. It looks a little suspicious. So let me carry on.
Oh, and they're clean shaven, too. Nobody had beards.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, notice anything about that flag up there? I see creases all over it. So this was at a DeSantis rally, and next thing you know, this jamoke shows up, right? I guarantee you, this is a homeless guy who got a $10 bill. He's like, dude, can you carry this flag? Here's a 10, right? Doesn't, like, he doesn't look like the kind of guy who could have just afforded to go out and literally buy the same standard issue flag and put it on that pole. Right. It's just so completely obviously not real. You know, these aren't like people who really love their flags and have them displayed proudly at all times, or else they all fold them up in the exact 8x8 shipping package.
Arrange the bag until the next employment.
Yeah, it's just they must go to folding class. That's the first part of becoming one of these ultra white nationalist dudes, is you learn how to fold stuff. That must be a day they spend together learning how to fold flags.
Well, do you have to be a dude too to be an ultra white nationalist? I mean, where are the women in this movement? If it was like truly a movement, because we have opinions and thoughts about things too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. If it were accurate that this was truly a representation of our country, wouldn't there be women out there too?
They're just looking for dudes 20 to 35 years of age with a BMI of around 21 or so. I mean, here it is again. Look at this one, right? It's got the same creases on it. Maybe it's the same flag. I don't know, right?
Same laundry detergent.
But it doesn't even, it smells like a really bad Fed LARPing action, you know? It just doesn't feel organic or real, and it just looks patently, obviously false and wrong and just made up. That's what it looks like to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Any thoughts? It's kind of what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting,
the skeleton is interesting in all of that, the bones.
Yeah.
Like the mask that guy's wearing.
So here's what's interesting as we come through this, right? Remember, we had to go through all of this. So this is an article that came out on June 25th of 2021. This is post January 6th, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, I read dozens of articles like this. In response to unfounded claims that undercover federal agents or informants helped plan and carry out the J6 attack in the U.S. Capitol, Professor Ira P. Robbins, who's written about unindicted co-conspirators, tells the New York Times, he says, so if it's true, where's the evidence? Where's the evidence that there were any undercover agents in on this thing? So there were articles after articles, so many written by that. Remember AP Fact Check It, which means it's probably not, it's the opposite of whatever they came up with, right? But this is a full year afterwards by Allie Swenson here, AP Focus. This is federal agents didn't orchestrate January 6th, they said here. And but just, this is supposedly an article. And look at the language. The House committee investigating the January 6th insurrection poked another hole in the pro-Trump conspiracy theory. All right. For something to be a conspiracy theory, it can't have any basis in fact. The number of agent provocateurs and federal informants. And I mean, come on, the FBI's motto really ought to be foiling our own plots since 1993. Because like half the plots that they, it's like some low IQ dude that got entrapped into something, right? They like gave him the words, the materials, pointed at him the right direction, and then showed up to arrest him when he showed up there, right? Like that's happened so many times. So a conspiracy theory probably you would think would have zero basis in fact, right? But so they say that federal agents orchestrated the attack, confirming on Tuesday that a man at the center of the claims said he'd never been an FBI informant. This is about Ray Epps, right? And this guy was there. He was stoking this. He was very clearly involved. There are these other people who went to jail for a very long time for less than what Ray Epps did. And this article says it's debunked. Your conspiracy theory is debunked because Ray says he's never been an informant. Case closed. Right? All right. I'm not here to rehash all this, but there was this incredible article that came out on Michael Schellenberger's Substack today or in Twitter. And I came across it, and it's this. So get this. Look at this, Evie. Why the FBI and Democrats are attacking whistleblowers. The FBI says now that it won't release January 6th surveillance video because it would show too many undercover government agents and informants.
What?
That really? Took a second to settle in, but yeah.
I'm sorry. I can't tell what's real and what's BS anymore. Like, it's stranger than fiction, you know?
Uh-huh.
It really is.
He writes here, indeed, there may have been hundreds of undercover government agents and informants, both local and federal, in the J6 crowd. According to one January 6th witness, there were 100 to 200 Secret Service agents alone at the Capitol before and during the breach of the police barriers.
By the way, Chris, did you see that one? There was something that was going around Twitter, and I wish I had it, but it was showing the video, like, with the sound that they released it with, and apparently, like, a lot of the security footage had no sound, but they just they added their own soundtrack. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
It was, like, the sound of, like, you know, people just rioting, probably from the BLM riots, honestly. Yep. And they just added that to people coming in through the doors of the Capitol and decided that, you know, that's what they put out to us. So I think they've manipulated this in a big way.
Well, this whole thing, they were trying to pretend the whole time, like, oh, we didn't know this was going to happen. It caught us by surprise. We didn't have any agents out there. We had no way of knowing. This was just an insurrection, right? It's a little bit less insurrection-y when you have hundreds of undercover agents out in there. And then the next question is, well, what are they doing? Mm. Right? Are they provoking, as provocateurs sometimes do? Or are they trying to dial things down? And so I think obviously somebody could, if they wanted to, could investigate this and say, okay, what was everybody doing out there? Mm. And then you get a story around it. I'm not here to relitigate that day. I'm just here to say that the FBI has been caught again here in a very big way, just overtly operating against U.S. citizens in a very uneven way, right?
Well, there's no consequence if they do.
There doesn't seem to be a consequence.
There's nothing that happens to you. If you lie, like Ray Epps, if that whole situation happens, you don't get in trouble with anybody, at least not to our knowledge.
I know. So check this out. So this was in a Rolling Stone article a while ago, and every so often they write a good one. But they're still on my double secret probation list for all of their COVID coverage, which sucked. They said here, in the aftermath of the January 6th insurrection, the FBI told Congress and the American people the agency had failed to prevent or fully prepare for the worst attack in the U.S. Capitol in more than 200 years, in part because it lacked the authority and capabilities to more aggressively monitor social media, where much of the planning for the insurrection took place. So the FBI story is like, oh yeah, dude, we just didn't have the authority to monitor social media. Like, come on. That is such an obvious lie. This is my hardest part about all this, Evie, is that they're asking me to accept things that are clearly, obviously, stupidly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We just know that, right?
Yeah, it's true. But it's like insulting.
It's totally insulting. Like, of course. Well, anyway, carrying on, as FBI Director Christopher Wray told Congress last summer, the FBI had circulated intelligence materials and other resources before January 6th, but the agency had limits in what it could and couldn't gather from social media. Quote, when we have an authorized purpose and proper direction, predication, there are lots of things we can do at social media, and we do, Wray said, but what we cannot do on social media is, without proper predication, yeah, big words, and authorized purpose, just monitor, just in case, on social media. What are you talking about? I monitor, you monitor, we all monitor. That's what people do. I don't get this. All right, so anyway, yet internal FBI records obtained by Rolling Stone show that well before January 6th, the Bureau already engaged in ongoing and widespread tracking of Twitter, Facebook, Telegram, and other social media platforms, of course, and we all knew that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, duh. The new document suggests the agency has all the authority it needs to monitor social media platforms in the name of public safety, and this article goes on to say, in fact, they've been doing this around Black Lives Matters, Quakers, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just who they are and what they do. So this was just a complete, obvious, really poorly concocted lie. But to your point, what's going to happen to Director Wray for saying, oh yeah, you know, we totally didn't, we just failed to monitor. So totally caught us by surprise, right? Yeah.
I think we're going to have to get fed up enough to stand up as people and say, that's enough. You're fired. We don't, you know, we have to take this over. Obviously, it's the system is not working as it stands, you mm-hmm. know, as it's been put into place. Because
yeah.
we could talk about it all day long, but until we actually take some action, nothing's really going to change.
No, I'm with you. This is all.
We're talking about it to find other like-minded people, which is good.
Well, right? People are waking up. You know, the Great Awakening is happening. By the way, that is the subtitle of a movie by Mickey Willis that just came out.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it yet, but people said it was fantastic.
I haven't either.
Fantastic. So
as soon as we're done with our planting.
Yeah. Spring planting is kind of right after this, we will be planting potatoes. So this is something that's bothered me for a long time. I've talked about it before. This is so-called white supremacist group called the Patriot Front. And I'm just super suspicious because they seem to get police escorts to and from their events, right? And then when they finally did get arrested, quote unquote, they think this is an Idaho Pride event or something, right? Mm-hmm. They don't take their masks off, right? They don't take their sunglasses off. Look at these guys. Look at them. Look. The soles of their shoes aren't even like, those are new. Everything's new. The khakis are new. But can you think of another group where you would get arrested by the police for, you know, and again, white nationalists are, according to Biden, the biggest threat that America faces right now.
Mm-hmm.
And when you round up 40 of the biggest threat, 30 or 40, you take their masks off.
Right. Was this around, during COVID?
No.
Okay. Cause that was my question.
No, this is way after. So.
Yeah. I wouldn't like that. I mean, isn't it part of like when you arrest somebody is whatever lies they told, you're like, all right, that's enough of the BS. And you pull down their mask, so to speak,
yep.
right? Metaphorically as well, just to be like, that's it.
Well, of course, the reason you don't do that is because then you reveal that actually that person works for you. And you have a problem on your hands, right?
Yeah, that might be embarrassing.
This way, you know, you'd need some sharp-eyed person to come forward and say, count up all the people who are there, and then if they're arrested, they must go and have mugshots, and then make sure that there are as many mugshots as there are people in this picture, because I'll bet you anything, there's a couple missing, at least, right?
Oh, probably.
From that whole thing. So, yeah. Anyway.
What made you decide to talk about this tonight? What's going on around this for you? How are you feeling about it?
Well, so... as you know, I track the world very, very carefully, and I spend a lot of time looking at all the big data and, you know, talking about things like inflation and Federal Reserve policy and debt and where we are in the energy story. And all of that's true. But if you really want to know when things are about to take a turn, mm-hmm. like when the school of fish is going to suddenly jilt left,
yep.
when the murmuration is going to swarm the other direction, right?
Yep.
That you have to go down to the anecdote level. That's, I need to track when, where, and how people are going through this waking up process. So there've been a lot of anecdotes lately, and a big portion of that was, and I can't reveal much here, so to be as cryptic as possible without being overly cryptic, somebody who works very deeply for the government has been a true believer, government pension, inside one of those three-letter agencies, had said that their wake-up call was seeing this Durham report that came out that we talked mm-hmm. about, mm-hmm. right? And
the
seeing
last time,
the just the level of, oh my God, we don't live in a democracy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
When something like the Durham report just come out and the whole place, everybody sort of shrugs and we sort of like nothing happens. That clearly showed that there was the largest and most serious breach of every democratic institution you can think of. And so their concern was they woke up rather suddenly and said, oh, I don't live in a democracy. I live in a something else. Mm-hmm. And when you don't live in a democracy, you have to begin to factor in things like, oh, what happens to people's rights under non-democracies? Oh, bad things. What happens to money systems, particularly overly indebted countries, when they no longer are a functioning democracy, no checks and balances? And the answer is, well, bad things happen, which is why we talk about things like this is gold-backed money. It's direct gold-backed money. This is currency-grade Mylar, you know, with a tenth of a gram of gold in there. I'm a stacker. I got this is 10 ounces of silver here. I got ever since I was a kid, I love silver. Mm-hmm. It's called junk silver, but it's not. This is now precious silver.
It is.
It's not junk silver anymore. These are old pre-1964 you can see from the sandwich side, silver quarters. So I'm a big believer that your money system is the organizing thing. Every money system punishes some behaviors and forces others.
Mm.
Our money system, the way it's constructed, has been rewarding a lot of very bad behaviors for a long time, you know?
Yeah. I know the incentives are all wrong.
And that's the core of it right now, is that our money system is in bad shape. And I think our money system's going to break down. I don't know when, I don't know how, I don't know exactly why, but it's going to break down. And it's going to, because it's been overused and just really...
It's very distracting. What are you doing?
I'm sorry. I had to find something I needed.
Okay.
Sorry.
is our money system is this thing that is now... You can all feel it creaking, right? We can all feel it. And this is a common anecdote I get. This has been a big week of anecdotes. So it sounds, goes something like this. Stop me if you've heard this before. My relative, my sister, my brother, my son, my mother, who has never thought this way before, never been red-pilled, has now come up to me and said, something's wrong. You know, I don't know what it is.
Mm.
And I'm convinced that what's wrong is that our whole system, all of our systems are shredding. So I track, long way of answering. So when you're asking, why am I tracking, you know, this whole like self-dismantling of the FBI, and it's mostly around the trust that people place in it, right?
Yeah.
That is really broken down. So I track that, because when that really breaks, you have this loss of faith in the institution. And as goes the FBI, so goes the Department of Housing and Urban Development, so goes the Department of Energy, so goes the Federal Reserve. Like, this just this domino effect, right? Like,
right.
Like, this faith can be lost very rapidly. And it's a social phenomenon when the trust is broken beyond a certain level. It can't be repaired anymore.
Yep.
Right? I can't. Like the FBI has a massive, massive trust problem on its hands right now,
right,
for a huge portion of the population. And if it wants to be a viable institution, not just that it has the power to arrest people and make their lives miserable and, you know, stomp on them and all of that, but I mean, if you want to have any sort of credibility as an organization institution,
mm-hmm.
well, you got to make sure that you're operating in integrity.
Sure. Well, that's true of any relationship, right? You could mm-hmm. just take it on, like, we've had experiences with people who have not been in integrity, you know,
and we have,
it's pretty much damaged that relationship for forever on some level, you know, even if there's forgiveness or whatnot.
Look, trust in the FBI is eroding left and right.
All right, 1 second.
Feels like we're in the...
That's distracting.
Thank you. I know that was distracting. I was just trying to get over to this thing real quick. No, I agree. So that, but it's just like being in a relationship. So we're in this relationship and it's clearly breaking down. Now, I did an episode a long time ago about just mapping the 15 signs you're in an abusive relationship into my relationship or our relationship with our government. It's very abusive, right? Gaslighting, threats, coercion, you know, all kinds of stuff, right?
Yep. I agree.
Not of the people, by the people, for the people. It's really weird. So,
and we can't leave.
It's like moment that we need a real church committee. That this is a moment.
Get out of here.
Why does this have to be
moment like?
Stop. Okay. So this was an interesting one that came up a while ago. And we'll see if this comes through. But this is Meet the Press. This is, you know, this is NBC.
Oh, I think I saw this.
We did. We played this
Look,
a while ago.
Trust in the FBI is eroding left and right. Feels like we're in the moment that we need a real church committee, that this is a moment like when the J. Edgar Hoover FBI clearly was no longer helping the American people. There was a moment. This feels like we might be in one of those moments. Look.
Yeah. So if I don't know if that sound came through, but you know, it said, yeah, you know, the trust in the FBI is eroding. We maybe need a church committee, which was the committee under Congress that investigated the CIA back in the day. And that, you know, this is a big deal. This is a really big deal. And the media is going to try and act as if we can just sort of like move on, get distracted by the next thing, not really talk about it. And then the media is going to wonder why, of course, their own poll numbers are in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Joe Potter says just like my last marriage. Right. Yeah. Once you're at the gaslighting state, once you've lost trust in another human or in an organization or an entity, it's almost impossible to get it back. And it's kind of like with post-apartheid, you know, how did they heal from apartheid in South Africa? They had this Truth and Reconciliation Committee, but the saying was, there can be no reconciliation without truth. Right. So if you're in a relationship where somebody's lying to you or they're gaslighting you or they're abusing you or they're in some way not being faithful or honest or operating out of integrity or trickle truthing you, which is where you get a little tiny piece of truth. Right. Mm-hmm. No, I never talked to her. Oh, we talked. No. Well,
not very long.
We never touched. Okay, we held hands for a little while. Right. It just goes on and on and
well,
on.
That reminds
until you get
me of the
truth,
narcissist
right?
prayer.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, so that's why I brought all that up. That's why I bring that up. Okay. But the point here for me is that this is so easy. Just take their masks off and then maybe we get a little trust back. But anyway, this all looks like government live action role playing called LARPing. This is what a government agency bureaucrat thinks a white supremacist group would look like.
How would you, could we as the public like intervene in one of these situations? Like what would action look like if this group was out there and we just as, you know, other citizens went out and were like, hey, who are you? Or whatever. I mean, is there anything that we can do? We have to build those parallel structures, right? We have to get ourselves organized because otherwise they're just going to keep pulling this on us over and over.
Why are they doing this though? What do you think the point is? Let's assume for the minute this is just as fake as it looks. Total LARPing.
My personal opinion,
mm-hmm.
I think it's a power grab. I think that they're trying to make it seem that there are these terrorists in our country and that they have all these reasons then to take our freedoms away, which includes our right to own a gun, our right to free speech, and also our right to information. So like shutting down the internet or policing it, because, oh my God, we don't want these groups getting together and, you know, creating ideas with anybody else, right? So they're just perpetuating that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What are people saying?
Yeah.
What are peeps got to say?
Well, Michael Perilla says here, hey, Chris, longtime fan, had to deal with life. Yep, life happens, Michael. And haven't listened to you for at least 5 years or longer. I'm subscribing to your channel. Thank you for what you're doing. RFK Jr. for Prez. Little known fact, just yesterday, was it yesterday? What's today?
Sunday?
No, it was Friday. What? Anyway, in Friday, we were, Evie and I were invited, and we go down to New York City, and we were invited there for a luncheon, with about 18 people in the room, and RFK Jr. was in the room, and we wanted to meet him in person, up close and personal, find out what he cares about, and
it was so much fun.
Yeah, well,
it was great.
I've never had a political stance, or a pox in both houses. It's sort of a uniparty.
Yeah.
I'm like, whatever happens, is irrelevant. But he made a good point. So he was asked a question and sort of, said, given the opportunity to lead off with what he thought, like, what's the number one thing, right? You know how it is, presidential candidates. Oh, my number one, I want children to have equal access to education or something, right? No way. This guy, RFK, he launches in and goes, free market economies and free market capitalism are the way that the most people are brought into up the curve and into prosperity. And the problem is we haven't had that for decades because it's all been co-opted by corporations and special interest groups and lobbying and this and that. So it's really more like corporatocracy that we have right now. And this is really limiting the ability of middle class people, the majority of the people, to get anywhere, and they have no voice in this whole thing, he said. So with that as the backdrop, the number one threat we face is central bank digital currencies. If we allow a programmable central bank currency to be programmable and to get into politicians' hands, he said, that's it. The future is a future of slavery for people. I was like, that's exactly right. That was amazing. I'd never heard a candidate ever talk like that before. Like, that was context, and
I know,
and it made
database.
Sense. And I was like, yeah, that, like, yeah, these people we're looking at here. These are fake live action role playing. Faux.
Yeah, he
white nationalist. Whatever the story is, but no, he has context.
It's true,
and it makes sense. That's so unusual.
It is very unusual. And honestly, Chris and I are very apolitical in that sense, because if it were reversed right now, that the right was being a bunch of jerks to the left, we'd be picking on them just as much.
Oh, absolutely.
It doesn't matter. It's just that we seem to be misguided in our world these days. And, both of us want to hope that people, and I'm sure you as well listening to this, want to hope that people are endeavoring to do good in the world, and that they actually care about their fellow citizens and what we face as a country, as a people, as a community. But, I've started to lose hope about that. And it was nice to meet somebody. Also, Dennis Kucinich was there. He's amazing.
Powerhouse.
Chief of staff. It was really wonderful and refreshing to meet somebody who embodies integrity in a palpable way. Like, I could feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Energetically from him.
Yeah. And so I do the, remember, peak prosperity, I don't do left, right. I don't care. Left, right's irrelevant to me. And it's a difference without a distinction anymore, honestly, right? What do they really disagree about? Foreign policy, blowing to other people up in other countries, printing money
debt?
At the drop of a hat, debt.
Not really.
Like, they don't, like, there's no distinction. So that's why it's a difference without a distinction, right? Or a distinction without a difference, either way you look at it, right? Mm. So I haven't been that way. I've been up-down. And my up-down axis is integrity at the top, and rigid ideology is down at the bottom, right? Because that, to me, is the opposite of integrity. Because integrity means you are willing to change your mind at a drop of a hat. So Kennedy represented, he came off like old-school liberal, right? Which meant open mind. He'll change his mind if the data changes. He's not into wars. He's just trying to help as many people as possible.
Mm-hmm. Open heart,
right? And so before the term liberal got co-opted and made meaningless, I mean old school, right? But today, what's a progressive versus a conservative on the left-right axis? Just nothing, to be honest. Very few differences. But up-down, yeah, I care, I care a lot about open-mindedness and all of that, right? And I care that we're not going to go down this totalitarian path.
Mm-hmm.
Please. Could we not go down?
Could we not?
Could we not do that? History is pretty clear on this. Like, that stinks.
Yeah, it does.
Pol Pot. Stalin, Hitler.
It's full of ugliness from that.
It's pretty much not a good direction to go. But there are people who really want to go that direction. And that's how I fit this.
They're feeling nostalgic.
this is the made for TV live action production of people who want to keep us confused and push us down a path where we end up in some sort of totalitarian state. So I see this.
Yeah. I think you're,
you know. So yeah, Rooster too. Talking about crony capitalism is a real issue. It is. It is crony capitalism. That's what
RFK said.
Yep.
Crony capitalism. It's not that we don't, he's like, make no mistake, we don't have capitalism at this time.
No, we
have
don't.
Crony capitalism.
Yeah.
It's very different in the corporate, you know, world.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's turn to some viewer comments here.
Oh, I'm happy.
Because I think this fits in right now. This was in response to, I think, this is either one of our, I think this is from our live cast last time. James Fournier 9450 writing, accountability. We want accountability. I want accountability. I'll tell you what, put these treasonous people in the same, with the same dime they use on whistleblowers like Edward Snowden, put them in jail. So that's why I brought up that truth and reconciliation. There, without truth, there can't be any reconciliation. I would amend that and say, without accountability, there can't be any change. Like somebody's got to, remember that scene in National Treasure, the movie, and Harvey Keitel's talking with Nicolas Cage's character, you know, he says, at the end, he's like, well, somebody's got to go to jail.
Well, somebody has to go.
Somebody's got to go to jail, right? That's just how it is.
Yep.
That's how I believe, I'm a big fan of that. Somebody's got to go to jail.
Yeah.
Right? And it's now coming out, of course, very awkwardly and with common knowledge is starting to come through that there were these magic holy shots were actually quite damaging. We're seeing extraordinary blossoming of awareness around this in Australia now. It's happening in Europe too.
Oh, I know.
It's like huge.
It's exciting, but it's a little shocking. I don't know if that's how other people feel about that. It's been crazy to hear that the things that we were concerned about with those have actually, the data has come in that's in fact been true. Like that MS, like all these other horrific diseases are seeming to come on the tails of that, of those. I don't even know what to call them anymore.
Well, the truth is starting to come out, right? But it can't just be the truth. There has to be some reconciliation around that as well, because, and I would suggest that involves accountability, because some people did some awful things.
They did.
I mean, bad stuff.
Do you think, though, with the WHO making, like, a treaty to try and sort of control everybody and the next pandemic response and all of that stuff that's been going around, do you think that we're going to end up having like a Nuremberg sort of style trial around this incident? No? Darn.
Not at the current trajectory. But I'm really hoping that happens.
Yeah.
You know, because I do. I think we need accountability, you know? I want that t-shirt that says accountability. That's not just for little people anymore. Right?
Yeah.
Because no, it lands on you and I, right? There's 87,000 IRS agents about to be unleashed. Trust me, there's going to be a lot of accountability for a lot of people coming up soon, right? You know, they will print trillions through their PPP loans and hand them out to insiders, you know, and never follow up on that. But if you missed a couple of receipts back in, you know, 2014, you might be scroomed, you know?
So maybe they'll catch the people then that have been funding money into that. I think it was a left-wing organization, political organization, that was making like thousands of donations in the name of...
Oh, yeah. Maybe they could investigate that.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be nice.
I just need some closure around that. I really do.
Yeah. If you don't know what she's talking about, this was another James O'Keefe special after post Project Veritas, which did the stupidest thing ever by ditching their star. Right. So at any rate,
you're lost.
What he discovered through more investigative research that that old people here and there were making thousands and thousands of donations to the Democratic Party. That sounds like clear, obvious, direct evidence of federal laws that were broken. Where's the FBI on that? Nowhere. Right.
They're busy. So, call back later.
Hey, Why don't you read a couple of these?
Sure. Sorry if I don't say people's screen names correctly, but I'll give it a shot. Marge Huggins says, I feel like I'm at the breakfast table with two amazingly conscious people. Dr. Chris explains things so even I can understand. That's a miracle.
Awesome. Aww. And this one's about you, so I'll read it. Juan Gomez says, wonderful that Evie's confidence has blossomed so much, so quickly. I'm writing this just 20 minutes in, and it surely will be so helpful to so many. And this was in response to
sharing my story.
Sharing your story and talking about drug injuries and all this and that. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, speaking of which, so many stories like this in the comments
One. During a very painful divorce, Jeff Lovejoy says, I was placed on diazepam primarily for panic attacks and insomnia. Turned out my body stored the drug in my system and released it in overflow situations when I couldn't find any more places to put it. What a nightmare. Made the panic attacks and insomnia seem like a day at the beach. Fortunately, my doctor saw what was happening with just observational diagnosis and a simple blood test. Still, what a nightmare. I was also very fortunate that my father was a doctor. Doctors always get the best care, mainly. The children of doctors get the same treatment. I was very lucky. A few more flooding episodes and I wouldn't have been dead. Or maybe I wouldn't have been alive.
Maybe. Yeah. A lot of stories like that where people were talking about the just their own nightmare trips. And they're all kind of similar stories. It's like, I got put on these things and getting off was worse than anything they were meant to help with in the first place. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And these are the stories we know about, because there are a lot of stories which end even more tragically, where there's, you know, dead men tell no tales, right? Like, these stories end badly for people who are on that far end of the spectrum and have those really bad reactions. Mm-hmm. Right.
I know. Yeah. I appreciate everybody who tuned in for that one. And if you're interested in hearing it, definitely check out, that was the last live episode before this one that we did. But I appreciate everyone hearing my story and, you know, being so thoughtful with your responses. I was really moved by everybody's thoughts.
Yeah. Well, and I love reading all these comments. Nancy McDaniel here. Why don't you read that one?
Me?
Yeah.
She says, thank you for sharing, Evie. In your firsthand experience, and Chris, supportive, significant person, on your road less traveled. Your truth voice is lighting the candle, illuminating the space of darkness, giving strength and courage to those individuals that are going through their tapering off process with this catastrophic harmful medication, or in the process of making that decision to begin their journey in reclaiming themselves. Mm. Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for writing that one. And This is kind of what I'm hoping. I don't want to put too much on a person, but if RFK could, I can't think of anybody more uniquely suited to help blow open this horrifying thing we've done to ourselves through our pharma, what we call medicine, which is often just a sales pipeline for pharmaceutical interventions. And their job is to get you on something chronically so they can sell to, they've created a lifetime customer and you fit neatly into the CFO spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. It's not to make you better. It's not to make you well, right?
Well, and we've lost touch with other things. So it's like, I think there's a maliciousness to it, but there's also just, instead of taking this time of great richness in, you know, this time period of having excess resources, we have forgotten all of the herbal sort of more folk lore kind of things that we could have been looking into, because nature, I think, offers amazing medicine. Mm-hmm. And is much better for us than these concentrated, toxic concoctions, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So sadly, we lost something too. Like, it was a both and, in my opinion.
Well, I think the stories that you know, in these, some of these comments, that the representative comments we serviced here, is the system is right there for you when they're giving you the injection, when they're there giving you the pill. If that turns out to be bad and you have all these side effects, then you get marginalized, gaslit, excluded. There's no support, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if we were not a completely unhealthy society, we would say, listen, we understand, you know, we're going to give like a mass treatment at scale. There's going to be a few people who get injured and we should do our best to, you know, that's collateral damage in this story. So let's help them. Mm-hmm. No way. They just don't. They put you through even worse ringers, the insurance companies. If you ever try and go through these, you know, the compensation committees,
mm-hmm.
like, it's just, there's lawyers arrayed against the whole system is just there to wear you down and beat you up, right? So that's
horrifying.
And take horrifying.
A slice of the pie right alongside.
Of course, yeah, they get paid well to do that, of course.
It's no, it's bad. Australia is dealing with that. There are people that have been suffering now for years and they still haven't, you know how they set up a fund for that, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
I think they were maybe better than we were at that, yeah? I don't know.
It's nobody wants to admit it, right? You know?
I know.
So Joe Potter says, yikes, my late father was on 15 meds, passed at 60. That doesn't sound healthy, being on that many meds, of course. And, you know, there was a couple of comments. I don't know if I pulled them up, but also noting that Hashimoto's disease was a thing that people's stories, individual stories, they said, hey, my sister, you know, all this thing, put on all these crazy things, finally discovered her thyroid was out of whack.
Right.
And that was actually the source of what they were trying to cover up with all these other,
mm-hmm.
you know, various compounds and things like that. So it's an important thing that popped out of this for me.
Yeah.
Just like I would, like if somebody asked me, like, oh, I'm going through big anxiety, I'm like, get your thyroid checked. Right? Just seems like something you would do,
yeah.
Right?
And when I was looking, and thank you everybody that mentioned that because it was helpful for me. When I looked into it, the Hashimoto's, it's also not just like your standard tests. You really have to get yourself educated and up the curve on this stuff, mm-hmm. because I guess there are like if you measure thyroid hormones like normal, it might not show up because your mm-hmm. body is basically dysregulated in certain ways. And so it's not always super evident to the average, you know, GP or whatever.
Yep.
So
yep.
Thank you guys for that.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk now very quickly about, if you haven't seen it, so on the main channel, I've restarted something called The Crash Course. The Crash Course is this big seminal series I put out, and I'm putting out a chapter a week. Last week's chapter was on inflation. So far I've sort of set the table, talked about banking, the Fed, and now inflation. And why do I do this? Because if you can understand what the system of money is, then you have a chance of understanding why you should probably plant a garden. Okay, I may have jumped a few too many steps there, but it's a very, very highly unsustainable system. So Carlos T. Lopez wrote, I'll be forever indebted to you. You've changed my whole life to continue to preach about your name for the world to hear. You've saved me from a huge financial debt with just little investment. Thanks so much to whoever Mrs. Eleanor Royston is, not clear about that, but I get a lot of people saying that the Crash Course changes how they see the world, right?
Mm.
It really does. It changes everything about how they see it. So this is my seminal work. This is what I do. You know, I'm getting back to it. COVID was an important place for me to put my voice in,
mm-hmm.
but this is even more important.
Oh, and those are great. This is what, when I first met you, this is what you were doing.
Yeah, I know.
And this changed my life in a big way.
How so?
It just changed my perspective. Like I started out sort of being someone who cared about nature deeply and felt like we were on an unsustainable sort of track.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't understand the intersection of energy in that whole story and how the incentive or lack thereof around yeah. energy actually drives so much human behavior.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
But you opened my eyes to that, and now I see the world in like, it's like looking at an equation with, what do you call it, your energy goggles, but
mm-hmm.
basically
mm-hmm.
being able to see how much petroleum is all around you. It's shocking when you really think it through.
Yeah, the energy goggles is a big important way of looking at this. And John Daniels wrote a couple of nice pieces that he said, what would a world be like without inflation, which is a question I asked in that chapter. Such a great question. It would be a fair and just world for the working class. This is amazing that you know, we could live in a world without inflation. In fact, we should live in a world of deflation, meaning as businesses come together and organize and become more efficient, stuff should get cheaper over time. Because if it takes me 100 years to hand build my first car, but then later we're cranking out 100 cars per hour right out of a machine, you know, driven factory. Inflation is not a natural thing that we just have to come to accept. It's like, well, you got gravity, you got the tides, and you have inflation, right? It's like this thing, it just happens, right? No, it's an act of policy, okay? And that's what I'm decoding for people here. And so it's an interesting idea. What would that world be like if you could live in a world without inflation? Meaning, think how different that is. You could save $100 today, knowing that in 100 years, it would still buy $100 worth of stuff. Now that changes a lot of decisions you would make, what you have to do, the kinds of risk you have to take, how you might organize yourself, right?
Right.
Every system enforces some behaviors, punishes others, mm-hmm. right? So this whole idea that you don't own your home, mm-hmm. I know people think they do, but you don't, right? Mm-hmm. You rent it from your local municipality, right?
Right.
You know, if you don't pay your property taxes, you'll find out you don't actually own your home, right? Very quickly.
Yep. Even if you paid your whole bank note.
But
back.
How different would the world be if you own your home in a way that it didn't have taxes associated with it, so you could knowingly pass it down through as many generations as made sense to you, right? Hmm. Within your family structure, and nobody can come take it. It's actually private property.
That'd be amazing.
Not semi-private property, not semi-hemi-private property, not actually private property that's mislabeled because it's actually government property that you're renting from them, right? Think about, well, it would change all, it would change your entire, how, like,
it would change everything.
Everything, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Properties wouldn't be turning over so quickly. This is what just came to mind for me. People wouldn't be like rushing to sell because there wouldn't be a benefit to selling. You know, there's not something to be gained.
Like, oh, we're making this decision. Like, oh, we need a place to store some tools down in our garden. But because it's all impermanent, it might all get taken away or we might move, right? Oh, we'll just get this crappy plastic thing at Home Depot, right?
Right.
But if we knew that this could potentially, that people five generations removed from us who we don't know, who are in our family, are going to be looking back going, you did what? Right? You're mm-hmm. going to be like, no, we're going to build this like beautiful stone.
Right. Like a mausoleum. No, it's true.
It would change everything.
Where's the country where they actually like, you're forced to take any building materials and reuse them? There's something like that.
Switzerland.
Is it Switzerland?
Switzerland. So story time. Driving along with a guy who just came in from Switzerland, right? Mm-hmm. And he's being driven through, this is a story comes from Coop out in California, oh, okay. right? And he's driving him along, right? And this guy looks out the window and says, why are you building houses out of cardboard? Right? He was confused because he could see, you know, that press board stuff on the side.
Oh,
you know,
right.
So it was a new construction going up.
Right? Yep.
And his point was, I don't understand why you would do that, because he could see how impermanent that was. Mm-hmm. And in unpacking that story with him, it turned out that in Switzerland, where this guy came from, that if you tore something down, like you took a wing of your building down that was no longer functioning, or your whole house just was cardboard and it needed to be replaced. So you tear all that old house down because you're going to put a new house in. There is nowhere to take the refuse. You have to live with it on your property. So people are like, I would not build with cardboard because eventually I'm going to have to like live with a stack of it on my right. property. So you make different building decisions, right?
You would.
Think how that changes things.
You really would.
Right?
Yep.
If they said, look, you can't throw away your old washing machine when it breaks because this corporation's put planned obsolescence in, and once you know it, it works for X loads before it mysteriously breaks and the circuit boards need blah, 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 blah. The whole thing is like planned obsolescence. So we have to live with all these machines that are designed to wear out in a somewhat annoyingly short amount of time, but not stupidly annoying because then you would change brands, but certainly they don't want them to last like they used to, right? But imagine if you couldn't get rid of that machine. Like, you know, if this is the decision, I'm down there, I'm at Best Buy and they got like washing machines and I know that, you know, I have to live with this thing. Like when it finally breaks, I have to live with it. I'm going to make a very different decision, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. or will demand different things. All right. So got off on that a little bit, little tangent. So let's look at this one. So this is a from Sunstone Farm. This is actually behind the paywall at Peak Prosperity. So we have these great conversations going on there. And this is in response to part two of the inflation episode. So every time I do an episode, I have a second part and our subscribers talk about it. But this caught me because a big part of this, I wanted people, my big takeaway for the one around the Fed coupled with the one around inflation is that this these things that are happening to us right now are acts of policy. People sit down, they're smart, they know what the impact is going to be, and they do them anyway, or maybe because of that, right? Mm. Remember, you'll own nothing and be happy?
Yep.
Well, who does own them? So look, check this out. These last couple episodes, by confirming my suspicions, have been thoroughly depressing. I'm starting to believe that we will never be able to afford our own home. I'm almost 40. Three small kids and my husband and I have been renting our entire adult lives. We both have bachelor's degrees from good universities, and although I stay at home so I can educate our kids and grow some of our food, cook healthy meals from real ingredients, my husband has a relatively well-paying professional remote job. The house we rent is too small for the five of us, yet we can barely afford it. This is a very common story. Mm. We live in a rural area in a southern state, and our neighbors are wonderful people, but very poor, much lower income than us, yet they own their own homes. We've been looking at housing for years, but the prices keep going up faster than our savings could possibly match. We moved from an expensive state to a middle income one, but this area is just as expensive as where we used to live was just a few years ago. So whoosh, rents just keep going up, up and up and up. So they can't save it. I feel like we did everything right. We were responsible. We lived within our means, worked hard to pay off what little debt we had. And I feel like the deck is stacked against us. Everyone I know, even people who make less money than us, they still have their own home. Many of them very nice homes. Sure, they may be in debt up to their eyeballs, but at least they get to live comfortably in the meantime. Living in a house that's too small and falling apart, struggling to balance our budget every month, watching our real income drop as inflation surges, is hard to cheer, but we're debt-free and feel like a winner. So that's why I put these pieces together. That's why I do the whole crash course, because if you understand the right, the system is stacked. Mm-hmm. It's stacked. It's designed to create winners and losers.
Yep.
That awareness ought to be debated vigorously down at the pubs. The founding fathers, so Evie, the founding fathers, they debated this stuff endlessly. The money, they never would have entrusted the money creation to a small cabal of unelected people. They would have said, that's stupid. If you allow that to happen, anything that does happen is on you, and you deserve for that to have happened to you because you're a dummy, right? Mm-hmm. But that's what we allowed to have happen.
It's nobody
elects the Fed.
No.
Nobody has any say in that, right? Who's on the FOMC, and you know, even the chairman's just appointed, right? But by the Senate, but I mean, it's just appointed, right? You know.
Sure. I mean, do you think people actually try to get into organizations like that with the intent of changing it, and by the time they're in it, they've been sort of slowly coerced into? Do you know what I mean? Because I don't understand why more people aren't standing up. I mean, personally, I don't have a desire to have an ambition to go be a part of the Fed so that I could change it. But I guess if I'm upset about what they're doing, I should.
Well, it's sort of like Mr. Smith goes to Washington, you know, all these people like, listen, I just got elected to Congress. I have these big dreams. I'm going to change everything.
Yeah.
I'm really going to have an impact. But first, I kind of have to work my way up so I can get on the right committees. And by the time that happens, you've been co-opted.
Yes.
And
that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, it's all gone. Like you've been bought into that system. But just to carry on this conversation real quick. So look at this one, right, Evie? So this is just in Fortune.com. High school sweethearts with good jobs, a baby on the way, and a $600,000 budget can't find a house after 2 years of hunting. It's just so demoralizing, depressing, and defeating.
Where do they live?
It almost doesn't matter anymore. This is how bad it's gotten.
Because originally I was like, wait, that must be California. It has to be. But I guess it's not just California.
No.
That's outrageous anymore.
No, it's outrageous all over the place.
And, so inflated.
Yeah, so it's a very common story. But the point of all this is that this is, it's actually a matter of policy.
Yeah.
And that policy has been in place for a long time. I mean, I'm a data guy. Let's look at the data real quick. This comes from WolfStreet.com. Wolf Richter, great guy. He puts together great charts. This is the wealth disparity monitor. Wealth per household in dollars. So the top 0.1% is in red. The remaining 1%, so that's 0.9%, right? Because it's the remaining 1%, except for the top 0.1%. That's in purple. Then you got the next 2% to 10%. Then green is the next 40%. And by the way, the bottom 50% don't even show up on the chart because they got nothing. It would just be a flat line across the zero mark. In fact, it might even be a little below zero.
Wow.
So this is net wealth. So it says the average household in the top 0.1% at the time they took this had around $135 million to its name. So look at what happened here. That black arrow, the horizontal aspect of that black arrow, that's the term of Ben Bernanke's career. He was the monetary arsonist who brought this all to us. And their policies, which, by the way, ended up in people like these fine folks here, and this person here not being able to afford anything, was specifically the outcome of the Fed policy, which created winners and losers.
Yep.
The winners were the top 0.1%. Flat out, no question about it. They went from 40 million per household on average to 140 million. They gained 100 million per household on average. The remaining not 1%, they did okay. Went from about 6, 7 million, it looks like, to maybe 20 million. So the remaining 1% did okay. 2 to 10%. Better than a sharp stick in the eye, but not much. Next 40%, not a lot happened there. And then the bottom 50% got nothing. This is a matter of policy. This is social redistribution. This is the Federal Reserve saying, you know what? We'd really like to reward the top 0.1% of people. And we want to screw everybody else in this story, relatively speaking.
Yep.
Right?
Seems like it.
You know what? I should have had the cucumbers and the grapes.
That would have been a perfect slot for it. That's true.
Be a great time to bust out the old cucumber versus grape story. We'll do that some other time.
You should say what it is.
You know, we'll get it next time. We'll leave it as a point of like curiosity for people. But it's social engineering. And by the way, this thing on my, I got stung by a bee here yesterday. If anybody's noticing this. We caught a swarm.
Baby.
We lost a swarm from our new bees and we caught it. And in the process,
I feel like it was kind of my fault because I am not experienced with bees yet. This is my first time. And I went to bring my daughter out there to look at them for because she hasn't been here since we had, you know, got them. And so I go to walk down to where the bees are and they're like probably 8 feet high. They're just like flying like swarming. Nuts, like this crazy buzzing sound. I'm like, this doesn't sound right. But Chris was busy and recording stuff, and then anyhow, it went a little long. But there they were on the peach tree. So
yeah, so they settled down and and they were in a big blob on a peach tree.
So then we had an adventure trying to get them.
They weren't
in
as
a
calm
box.
As people on YouTube made them look. They were a little angry with me. Trying to get him in a box.
Yeah.
Anyway, badge of honor.
There you go.
Right there. Yeah. So at any rate, couple things then that I'd like to talk about real quick is that we are very, very rapidly changing a lot of things at Peak Prosperity, the website, and got a great team now and a lot of support. And we have just content coming out all the time. Like I'm putting out content 5 days a week at this point back at the site that's in addition to anything that's going on like right now here. And so this is actually the framing though that I use is that, you know, seems like people are waking up. It feels like something's coming. And what's really happening is that there are a lot of, there are so many exponential things in our world that are changing and colliding and breaking with each other so rapidly. It's all happening all at once. And so my goal is to just help as many people as I can. That's our goal at here at Evie as well. You know, we just want to help people. We really plant a garden, but become resilient, you know, get a deep pantry, figure out how to buy, you know, make sure you have some of this stuff, have really good friends, work on your emotional health as much as possible, your physical health, figure out how to learn new skills and things like that. So how do we help people do that? And I say here, my biggest concern is that as fast as we're moving right now, I'm just worried we're not moving fast enough. Because if we think about this back, An adjustment reaction is something that happens in response to new threats. So a threat emerges into your life and you have to adjust to it. And there are people who are fast adjusters, people who are slow adjusters, right? It's just how you're built. But the adjustment reaction is a normal thing. And the key takeaway from the adjustment reaction process is that anything you do in advance of that threat arriving will feel like an overreaction. In retrospect, you're going to realize it was an underreaction. So right now I see this threat coming of maybe, you know, the petrodollar losing its status, of, you know, a fairly large economic dislocation. What happens if our debt markets actually do go into default? Things like that, economically speaking, we're not prepared with an energy policy in this country at all. Neither is a lot of Europe. What happens, anything you do today to prepare for that, it's going to feel like an overreaction, but it'll be a severe underreaction looking back at the whole thing. All right. So, at any rate, that's my main concern. So what do you do? That's the number one question we get asked all the time. So this is from that same article I wrote. And, it's three things. We do three things. One, you have to have access to trustworthy information, and it's presented with excellent framing and context. That's something I excel at. And in this world of AI bots, we should do one of these shows on artificial intelligence, because if you're not tracking this right now, let me just cut to the chase. You can no longer trust the interactions you have out there in social media with people. They're not real. They might be, but increasingly they're not. I guarantee if you've been on social media at all and you've been going back and forth with someone, you've been already had the pleasure of going back and forth with these AI bots. And by the way, they are intelligent. They're more intelligent than most human beings, and they're undetectable. And by the way, they know a lot about you. So that brings us to number two, which is you then need to surround yourself with really good people, really incredible people to discuss these things with, real people. Not an AI bot that wants to sell you something, whether it wants to sell you diapers or a new political philosophy. The AI bots there know you, and they are busy trying to sell you stuff and nudge you and push you and shape you and all of this stuff. And they know the right cadence patterns to ignore you or provoke you or nudge you or this.
Puppetry.
One, information you can trust. Two, people. Because we are the average of the five people we spend the most time with. So surround yourself with people who aren't menticided, got the mind virus, you know, all of that. And then the third thing is, well, you got to take concrete actions. You have to take actions to build up your resilience. Anything you do today, that feels to you like an overreaction, someday is going to feel like a complete underreaction.
Yep.
It's just how that's going to go. So I just wanted to say that.
Those are all your reasons for coming to Peak Prosperity.
Well, yeah, I want to help people.
I know you do.
I feel like time's running out, but maybe that's
I do too. I mean,
I don't want to catastrophize, but it feels that's how it's feeling. But it's the anecdotes. It's the number of people, Evie, I know now who were sort of on the fence or not even anywhere close to the fence who are now over here asking questions, knock, knock. Hey, you know.
Yeah. It's exciting on some level, I think. I come at it from a different angle than you do, but I see what you're sharing and how important it is and how it really touches people's lives. And I think that's part of the legacy you're going to leave behind, you know, when your time here is up. I think we have to reacquaint ourselves with nature and with our physical bodies again. I think we've sort of gone into this industrious world where we are spending so much time really not fully inhabiting our bodies and have lost touch with like what it feels like to play and be silly or to have pleasure or to even fully be with our pain. We're sort of robotic in our own weird way. And I think being outside is like such a spell breaker. I know it is for me.
And with real people, we're having real conversations, not any of this so-called small talk.
Exactly.
It's just like, all of that. By the way, I see a lot of people here have said AI, that you'd love to see a show on AI and that AI's eating your field, says Poisonhead. So you might be out of work in a while. A lot of people are going to be out of work in a little while due to AI. So we will be taking a dive into that at one of these points. And by the way, I have somebody inside my company and all I have them doing is they are 100% focused on AI. What's the threat? What's the opportunity? How's it changing thing? And it's frightening, alluring, could be good, but humans are involved, so we know how this is probably going to go.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Yeah. So all that. All right.
I've got, if you're all done, I've got something to close this out, just so you know.
I think we are in wrap-up mode here. So what do you have, Evie?
I've got something. By the way, I would love anybody's suggestions for future poetry. I'd love to read some new things. And so this is something that's one of my favorites, but I appreciated a couple of references. I haven't yet been able to chase them down that people had left. So thank you for that. This is called The Invitation, which is different than another invitation I typically read.
Oh, okay.
This one is by Mary Oliver, and I think it's so beautiful. She says, "Oh, do you have time to linger for just a little while out of your busy and very important day? For the goldfinches that have gathered in a field of thistles, for a musical battle to see who can sing the highest note or the lowest, or the most expressive of mirth, or the most tender. Their strong, blunt beaks drink the air as they strive melodiously, not for your sake and not for mine, and not for the sake of winning, but for sheer delight and gratitude. Believe us, they say, it is a serious thing just to be alive on this fresh morning in the broken world. I beg of you, do not walk by without pausing to attend to this rather ridiculous performance. It could mean something. It could mean everything. It could be what Rilke meant when he wrote, you must change your life."
Hmm. Beautiful. The invitation. Well, thank you very much for being here with us today, everyone. Leave your comments down below here, or come by Peak Prosperity. We'll scan through those.
Mm-hmm.
We'll, you know, feature them if it pulls into the next show. But love being here with you. Love sharing the space with you. We are the remnant. We are the tribe who needs to find each other. And that's why we do what we do, is to find you. And so reach out. Find us at the site. Find us here. But want to know what you think. And mm-hmm. I love the anecdotes. If you have any anecdotes of people waking up that seem surprising to you or caught you,
mm-hmm.
love to hear those. So with that, usual thing, hit like,
yeah,
resubscribe if you have to.
You're the only person who has to say that, I bet.
resubscribe. All right, with that, thank you very much, everybody.
Blessings,
everyone. We'll be back with you next time. It's been wonderful.
Good night.
Bye.